Do you know who was named the best putting mat in 2022 by My Golf Spy? It was the mats from Birdie Ball. It'll help you sink more putts and make more birdies with a Birdie Ball putting green, all in the comfort of your own home. Check out Birdie Ball online at birdieball.com. Birdie Ball is here to make golf more fun and accessible. Find out more at birdieball.com.
Welcome to Grilling at the Green After Hours, the conversation that took place after the show ended.
Hi, everybody. It's JT, and this is a special version of Grilling at the Green. Grilling at the Green is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome to After Hours here on Grilling at the Green. I'm Jeff Tracy, or JT as people call me. We're with Hughes Norton today talking about his great new book called Rainmaker. It's the story behind the story. I'll put it that way, because Hughes was there in the thick of things. Hughes made Tiger a very rich young man way back in the 90s and continued. He had lots of other clients like Pete Jacobson, as you know, from living here in Portland, and Greg Norman and Raymond Floyd. I thought the Raymond Floyd story was really funny. You bag man, you.
He is a classic. One of my favorite guys of all time. He just is a character. And, you know, when he got in contention, his eyes got real big and he'd walk right by you. He didn't know who you were.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the best. Phenomenal player.
You know, I'll tell you a Ray Floyd story, a reference. And we talked about this in the regular show with Peter Jacobson's tournament he put up on here. The Fred Meyer Challenge, Peter's Party, all that. It had various names. And I was there at the tournament one day and I was watching Trevino and this was in the pro-am, and Trevino's up with these four guys and they got the ball on kind of the back of the green. It's not off the green. It's right on the fringe. And so Lee grabs his putter. Three guys grab their putter. Another guy grabs his wedge and it was a very lengthy putt. Lee was going to putt last. Fine. So the first couple, three guys, they made good putts, but it didn't hold it. The guy comes up with a wedge and Trevino goes, "Wait, stop. What the hell do you think you're doing?" And the guy goes, "Well, I'm going to chip it." He goes, "There's only one guy that can make that chip shot, and that's Ray Floyd. And brother, you ain't no Ray Floyd. Now go get your putter." And he said, right in front of, you know, there was 300 people standing around that green. I always thought that was pretty funny. Okay.
Absolutely.
Here's some fun stuff for you. If Hughes Norton was declared supreme leader of golf for one day, what would Hughes Norton as supreme leader decree?
I would dissolve the LIV Tour to appease them. I would try to incorporate some of their trump card, which they play, which is the team golf aspect. Mm-hmm. And remember, one of the most appealing events every 2 years, Jeff, is the Ryder Cup. That's a team event. So there's something there that people like. I think they've maybe overdone it on the LIV Tour. But overall, I would bring Jay Monahan and Yasir, the head of the Saudi LIV Tour, and I'd lock them in a room. I wouldn't have to be there, and I wouldn't let them out until they settle this thing. Because if we're not careful here, pretty soon, the only place all the best players in the world are going to be at the same time is the four majors.
Right.
The Masters, US Open, British Open, PGA. And we've seen what happens in tennis. We went through this 25, 30 years ago. When the players and the federations and the players union all get in a war, pretty soon the same thing happened in tennis. The Grand Slams, Wimbledon, Australian, US Open, French Open, were the only place that the top players were appearing. And that's what fans want to see. And guess what? All the other tennis tournaments around the world pretty quickly ended up on ESPN2 because nobody wants to see that. You want names, you want stars. And we're on the precipice here. I mean, we've got to be very careful. And so if I were, I would, there's going to be a settlement if you're asking for a prediction. That's what I would do if I were the czar. But in terms of, there has to be a settlement. There's too many intelligent voices now, Rory McIlroy being the latest, saying, sure, look, I was against this at the beginning. I hated those guys, but this cannot continue. We're tearing both tours apart.
Do you think, a sidebar, and then we'll get on with the fun stuff here, do you think Greg Norman will survive that?
I don't. they made it pretty clear, the PGA Tour, when they testified in front of Congress, whatever it was last fall, that any solution, any merger, wrong word, but they didn't use that word, but any coming together in terms of the PGA Tour meant that Greg would have to be totally out of it. But I think Greg, by that point, will be smart enough to realize, even if he's ousted, to take his $50 million or whatever the Saudis paid him to front this thing, and go off, you know, in pursuit of his next venture, which he always loves to do. I give him enough credit to not be seen to be fighting this, if in fact we can come to an agreement.
You know, this Liv wasn't Greg's first venture into this. You know, and you talked about that, and talked about when Arnold stood up and said, "I don't want anything to do with this," and blah blah blah. I, as somebody who knows Greg, you or knew him, why do you think he kind of had that chip on his shoulder? And I don't know how to describe it any other way.
He always had that, JT. He just was. He when people, you know, I worked with him for 11 years. And when somebody crossed him, or he felt that somebody had crossed him or done him wrong, he never forgot it. And he always carried kind of a grudge. And I'm going to get back at him. You know, I'm in the right and that person's in the wrong. And it, you know, it's just part of his personality. He had a lot of wonderful things about his personality, but sure. I saw it with caddies. I saw it with business managers after he left us. He parted ways with the next two guys that he ended up having manage him. So just part of his DNA, I think.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. If you could play and back to some fun stuff here, Hughes, if you could play a round of golf with one of your golfing heroes, and you've played golf with a lot of top guys, obviously, and ladies over the years, but with one of your golfing heroes, who would it be?
I'll go you a couple better than that. I've okay. always thought my favorite foursome or dinner companions, if it was four, would be, and I'll tell you why, in no particular order, Raymond Floyd, Johnny Miller. Norman would be up on that list because he's great fun to hang with. But the other guy, and he's sort of a forgotten guy all these years later, Tony Jacklin. Maybe the best English player of all time. He won the U.S. Open and the British Open. And if Lee Trevino doesn't hit this fluky chip shot into the hole on the 70th green or whatever that was, 1971, Tony would have had one more British Open. But Jacklin was one of the greatest storytellers of all time. Miller's just wacky. You know, Johnny Miller, he won Pebble Beach one year putting, looking at the hole. And that was before Jordan Spieth and anybody else had come up with it. Johnny would try anything. He told me the great story at Oakmont once when he won there. He shot 63 on Sunday to win the 1973 U.S. Open. He was six or eight shots behind going into the – he gets on the range, and he's not hitting it very well. And he says, I heard this voice. It told me to open up my stance. And I'm listening to him say this. I'm like, really? He said, yeah. And so I opened up my stance. I thought, I got nothing to lose. I'm six shots behind. And I started striping the ball. And then the voice said, open your stance even more. And I hit 10 pure shots in a row. I took it to the golf course. That day, Jeff, he had, this is a U.S. Open course, right?
All right.
He had 12 birdie putts inside 10 feet and shot 63.
Yeah.
But he has wonderful thoughts and stories about the golf swing and stuff he's messed around with. And Raymond is for sure one of the great storytellers. And let me tell you, with that threesome with me, or if that's the foursome, Hughes Norton will do a lot of listening and a lot of laughing.
I'll come cook.
Okay. Please do.
I'll come cook. Besides Rainmaker, do you have a favorite golf book?
Boy, that covers so much territory. I mean, the Harvey Pennick book, the little red book, and then he did a little green book or something for instruction. I've always loved because it's so simple. George Pepper, my collaborator, has written a number of wonderful books. I'll suggest one for your audience, Jeff, while I'm at it. George actually lived just to the right of the 18th fairway at St. Andrews for 7 years. Never intended to. He's there 30 years ago playing the golf course, and he's walking up the 18th fairway, and he looks up, you know, the street is right there,
right,
and the buildings are right there, and he sees this sign in the window, you know, flat, which is what they call apartments over there, flat for sale. And he thought, oh, cut it out, went over and took a look at it, on a whim bought it. He and his wife Libby moved there from the United States, lived there for 7 years, loved every minute of it. He became a member of the RNA, and he wrote a book called Sojourn in St. Andrews.
And I've read that book.
I fear it's out of print now, Jeff, and I hope I'm wrong. But if anybody wants to get a taste of George Pepper's writing style, besides Rainmaker, which I hope you'll buy and read and enjoy, that one, Sojourn in St. Andrews, I absolutely fascinating.
I actually have George. I have a couple of George's books, and that is, you know, like getting there, make sure the power's turned on, and it's not all about golf. It's about life too. So it's very good. Okay. So what's the dumbest thing you've ever seen? Now, Hughes, you can eliminate yourself from this if you want to, but what's the dumbest thing you've ever seen done while representing somebody?
Oh boy.
That's a big wide open field, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it sure is. The dumbest thing I've ever seen done. Gosh, I mean, I've seen the greatest players in the world hit shanks. I've seen the greatest players in the world six putt. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, got to think about that one, Jeff. You got me.
Well, we can come back to that. We can come back to that. So if we put your skills to music, what would the music be?
50s gold. I still have Sirius set on that channel in my, you know, I'm a dinosaur. I grew up with Elvis and Chuck Berry and Ricky Nelson and Connie Francis and
Buddy Holly
all of that. I still listen to it. I make my trainer twice a week put that channel on, and it drives him out of his mind.
Okay. If you could dine with, this is actually one of my favorite questions. If you could dine with a historical figure, they can still be with us or long gone, who would it be, and what would be on the menu?
Wow. Well, obviously, Grilling at the Green would be catering this,
okay,
this event.
Yeah. We can do that.
And it could be a blank menu, because I know all your stuff's great. Pops into my head Bobby Jones. He was such a gentleman. You know, he's a brilliant lawyer. His writings about golf, I mean, just reading the words that he wrote, that was when people took a lot of pride, Jeff, in what they wrote and how they communicated. It's just masterful. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I would love to have a conversation with him. Hey, when you and Alistair McKenzie were walking around that farm in Augusta, what were you thinking? All those kind of things. You know, people forget he got a ticker tape parade in New York City when he came back from winning the Grand Slam, which in those days was the U.S. and British Amateur Championships and the U.S. and British Opens. There was no PGA. The Masters hadn't been invented. This guy was, you know, historically one of the
– yeah.
He's in the Babe Ruth category, whatever. People have forgotten all that. But I just would love to. And he was a Southern gentleman. And, you know, he more often than not, he wore a tie when he played golf. I mean, just that's fascinating to me, that whole era.
There was something to be said for the gentleman part too. We've seen it over the years. You right in the middle of it sometimes, but I see it as a press guy and on the exterior. Sometimes we lose our decorum, and not very often in golf. It's lost in a lot of other things in our society, I'm afraid, and I'm not preaching here, but I that's one of the things that drew me to golf as a kid, was kind of there was a set of rules to play by, but there was also an unspoken set of rules to behave by. And I always kind of liked that, because you kind of knew what you were going to deal with there. You know,
I'm one of these guys, Jeff, still, that it just irks me when the young kids come into the clubhouse, into the locker room, into the grill room, and keep their hats on. You know, yes. Or have their hats on backwards. That used to drive Arnold Palmer nuts. And at Bay Hill, he's tournament. I've seen Arnold do this. he would go around to some of the young pros and just stop by their table and in a quiet voice, not make an exam, just say, would you please take your hat off? We're inside.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. When your player was on a tour and there was a lengthy weather delay, a storm, whatever, they all head into the clubhouse. And you as a agent could usually get in there and stuff, but what did you do? What did you talk about then? Or did you just kind of hang around them and let them, you know, talk about whatever they wanted, whether it was the round they were having or the chicken sandwich at lunch?
Yeah, the latter. You know, you just, at that point, you're just trying to, you're taking a break. You've been intense and focusing and concentrating out there as a player. And now you're inside. And I found the best players just tried to clear their mind, you know, talked about the basketball game that might be on TV over the lunch table, or talked about their wives, their kids, you know, whatever it was. And I always tried to be a listener, not a talker. You know, I'm the caddy for a lot of these guys, right? I'm sort of as important as I might've been with their outside income and stuff. I just loved to hear them talk and learned a lot just by listening, which is maybe one of the lessons in our book.
I think so. Hughes, I was very close to my father, and he always had these little funny, he was a cowboy, so to speak. And he always had these funny little sayings and stuff, a lot of which I've kept in my repertoire over the years. But, you know, I think that we can learn a lot, even starting as a young person, if you kind of get your mind wrapped around it. You know, listen to your dad, listen to the people around your parents and that. I think that makes a lot of sense to people. Okay, so let's go back to the question we passed on. This isn't password here. We got to come back to it.
Okay, so, I thought of one.
Okay, go ahead.
This is in the book, and it's just plain funny. But and it goes to public relations. And as I point out in the book, IMG was not very good at public relations, and Mark never had to be. He started out with Arnold Palmer, who was a PR dream, you know,
and
sort of passed down to the rest of us. But we had a client by the name of DeWitt Weaver. Very few people will remember him, Southern guy, and he won more than once on the PGA Tour. Wonderful guy, and one of his championships that he won on the tour, and this would have been early to mid 70s, was a tournament in North Carolina sponsored by Liggett and Myers, the tobacco company.
Yeah, the cigarette people. Yeah.
Correct. So at the prize giving ceremony, the television guy is there interviewing DeWitt. All the Liggett and Myers people are lined up behind him, all wearing the Liggett and Myers sport coats with the corporate emblem on the jackets. And the commentator says, DeWitt, to what do you attribute your great play this week? And DeWitt thought for a moment and said, I stopped smoking.
Oh, priceless.
It became very quiet
around
the microphone. And I think the interviewer stammered and quickly went on to the next question.
I'm sure they did. Hughes, one last question here. If you were to give a piece of advice to anybody, but this question is usually directed at people kind of getting started out in their careers and, you know, they've got a journey to go on like you and I did. But what would your piece of advice be to anybody listening?
I think of a number of things when I think of that question, Jeff. For sure, communicating, being able to write clearly, concisely, as well as communicate in speech. I think you always improve at whatever field of endeavor you're in if you read widely. And that goes back to what I said a minute ago about listening. You know, talk to as many people at different stages of life as you can and learn from them. Learn to sell. Some people have it innately in them that they're good salesmen or saleswomen. Others have to learn it. And then my other thought would be just try to find as much joy as you can. You know, a career is a long time. I worked for 30 years. I had planned on working longer than that. most people work 40 years or more. Find something that you love. We referred to it earlier, because it'll never seem like work. And believe me, you will be better at something you enjoy doing than if that's not the case.
That is true. Hughes Norton, I should say John Hughes Norton III, right?
You can.
Okay. The book is Rainmaker, the Super Agent Hughes Norton and the Money Grab Explosion of Golf, From Tiger to Live and Beyond, with his co-writer, George Pepper. It's hitting the bestseller list, I guarantee it. But Hughes, thanks for being with us. Stick around after I turn everything off, but I really, really appreciate your time.
Jeff, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We'll be back next week. Next week's actually the Masters. So enjoy that, everybody. And until then, go out, play some golf, and remember, be kind. Take care.